Thanks, Lynn. Let's see if we can get that that baby going there. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Lynn. And thanks, everyone, for coming. It's great to be back here at Friend's House. It's been a few years since I've been here, so it was when Judy sent me the invitation, I jumped at the chance to come down. And I knew that I would see lots of old friends like Phyllis and Meta and Janice is here, Errol, and, of course, Lynn and Judy and Anton. And lots of other folks as well, too. So it's terrific. I want to say, David, yours too. So I want to say I'm under a little bit new auspices here, too, because I was just elected to the board of the International Peace Bureau that has three offices based in Europe. It's Canada's the world's oldest and largest peace network. And I'm really excited. I'm kind of brand new on the board, and I've been kind of doing some work in Canada. And we have about a dozen member organizations in Canada. We've been getting together, and we're going to recruit some more organizations. So I'm very excited about that. Of course, it was Janice and Meta that got me involved in this in the first place. So I think it's just great. And of course, these ban treaty negotiations are fantastic. I mean, it's amazing work that so many people have done. Like a few years ago, almost 10 now, I think, when ICANN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, started up. Like, they just kind of blew onto the scene. I mean, I've been involved in anti-nuclear work since the early 90s, but when ICANN showed up, they had these great graphics and super videos and lots of young people in their 20s, and I went, how did you guys figure out how to get people in their 20s, you know, interested in it? And look at the results. I mean, there was a lot of skeptics, right? There was a lot of skeptics. I heard, you know... Oh, I don't know, Ben, I don't know, man, you're reaching too far. But then suddenly, when the breakthrough came, everybody climbed on board now, and it's just fantastic. And the thing is, when this thing gets passed, and it is, and I'm utterly convinced it will, and folks like Aaron working on it, it's going to be up to us to make sure that it gets publicized, that people hear about it, that countries are held to account, because the nuclear weapon states, they're going to try to brush it under the carpet as soon as this comes through. So we're going to have a big task ahead of us in order to get this forward. So I'm going to be talking, I'm going to be ripping off Erin a little bit here on her presentation. She's got all the details more than I ever could on how the negotiations are going. She's right at the coalface on this. But I thought I'd talk a little bit about what's been happening, the political moment in Canada. And Lynn said we've got to talk about organizing. So I'm going to talk a bit about organizing too. I'm going to start with this photo. Look at that. I mean, when you see this, what do you think? What goes through your mind when you see that?
I think he's thinking it over. He's not going to take that hand if he can avoid it.
Trudeau is. He's looking at it and saying, am I going to shake this hand or not? Yeah. Anyone else want to offer something? What do you think when you see that?
He's going to tell his fortune.
I've got your fortune right here, Justin. Or no, Justin's telling his fortune.
You have a very short political life. It's very short. The line is short.
Anyone else? Go ahead.
Trump is trying to get Trudeau to listen to something, agree to something, do something, and Trudeau isn't going to do it, but he's not going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, well, that's you see, I don't want to do it. What's that? Yeah. Anyone else want to throw out
something? Plans of James Comey.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I agree with all that. I totally, like, when I saw this, I went, oh, man, that is so good. Because he's looking at it, he's thinking about it. If I shake this guy's hand, is that going to help me? Is that going to be good? If I don't shake it, you know, maybe I don't know if I want to shake this guy's hand. On the other hand, I also think comes saying, pay up. Pay up. $20 billion a year. 2% of your gross domestic product. We want 2% of your entire economy, which would be $20 billion a year. Pay up. Anyway, there's lots of things that you can think of when you look at that. But these are definitely challenging times. This is the context. I think it really captures the moment that we're in right now. What's happening with the Canadian government, the demands from the United States, what is the calculation going on up there right now? You know, is it going to hurt me if I shake the hand, or will it hurt me more if I don't? You know, what is the calculation going? So let's see what the pollsters are saying. Lynn, can you flip us to the next slide? So my friends at Abacus, which are pretty good guys, went and did a poll of Canadians about, you know, how much confidence they have in Trudeau in handling an international crisis, and how you would manage our relationship with allies. So trust in Prime Minister Trudeau if faced with the international crisis. So managing our relationship with our allies well. 52%, it's like 70% if you look. So this first part is a great deal of confidence, a good amount of confidence, not too much confidence, and no trust at all. Okay, so you see that? Positive, negative. Make the right decisions for Canada. 15 says a great deal of confidence, 47, a good amount. Weigh all the options carefully before making a decision, 15%, say a great deal, 48%, a good amount. So obviously a strong majority. So right now, that's the situation, that despite the fact that we have these concerns about massive increases of military spending, about Canada not showing up to the Ban Treaty negotiations, about Saudi arms deals, about all of these things that we're talking about, there's still this dynamic that we're facing. And it crosses party lines. And in fact, 70% had a great deal or a good amount of confidence in Trudeau. And when they did it by voters, 69% of NDP voters said that. So you see, even a vast majority, 69% of NDP voters, they had a great deal or a good amount of confidence in Trudeau and handling these international affairs.
When was that done?
In April. Yeah, it was done in April. So there was a lot of, now you can look at that as good news or bad news, depending on where you are. There were some other interesting things in that poll. 20% feel Canada should, only 20% felt Canada should be more like the United States. 80% said no. Okay? So that's positive. But also 79% of Canadians feel that tensions are rising. Tensions are rising. But the same 79% of people feel that tensions are rising in the world. But when you ask about this, and this was taken right after the chemical weapons attack in Syria, which was interesting, because there was a lot of safe weapons. North Korea was also launching off some missiles, and they still were. So they said, what about going to war? What about Canada going to war? Only 20% said that Canada should join a military effort to remove Assad in Syria. Only 20%. And that was right after those awful chemical weapon attacks. 20% said that we should join a military action against Korea. 14% said we should join military action against Russia. And China was the lowest, 10%. So you see an interesting problem there. Great confidence in Trudeau, in handling it from across the board, who has been moving in kind of concerning directions, especially with the recent statements last week. But at the same time, the Canadian public, very firmly in the peace camp, very firmly, very skeptical of individual military missions and what can be done with it, carefully, very skeptical. Okay, so next I'm going to look at a couple of areas and see where we stand in the political moment. I'm going to look at the government, media, academics, and I'm going to end up with the movement itself. So, Lynn, are you can you?
Oh, yes, I can do the next one.
Let's start with government. So, we've already said we've got a tremendously popular prime minister right now, and NDP voters. So many NDP voters voted for him because we just had to get rid of Harper. Everybody agreed we had to get rid of Harper. and all part, well, so many people who, I mean, I live in Ottawa Center. I heard people, you know, I'm voting liberals, because it was an NDP riding, Paul Doerr. That story was told across the country. People just felt we had to get rid of Harper. And I want to say, internationally, Trudeau looks awesome.
He's very popular.
Awesome. Yeah, I was in Vienna recently for a meeting of the International Peace Bureau, and my colleague from, she was from Finland, I was giving this little report, and I said, you know, Prime Minister has welcomed, you know, all these Syrian refugees, which has been very positive. And she said, we know. We saw the photos. We saw the photo of him in the airport welcoming the refugees. Everybody saw that. It went around the world, and that's the image they have. And you can understand why, you know, that would be held up, considering what it's like there and the reaction of the neo-Nazis and everything else going on there. So that looks fantastic. At the same time, so he's got a very free hand, because politically, the opposition, we just got Andrew Scheer elected, the Conservatives are still, we've got a brand new leader, we don't know where that's going to go, but the NDP is still in a leadership race right now, so he has very little opposition, really, in Parliament, so he has quite a free hand, which he's using. I mean, one would think that, you know, there would have been a lot of concern when he announced that military spending was going up by 70% last week. You know, and we were buying not 65 jets, but 88 now. And we're getting armed drones. And we're buying this, and we're doing that. Well, Huffington Post had a little interesting piece this week. Because sometimes you can gauge the interest of opposition parties by how many questions they ask in the question period. So this gives you an idea of where the issues, what are the priority issues for the various parties by what questions they ask. The Canadian, the Conservatives had 72 questions over the 3 days, the last 3 days. You know how many they asked about defense spending? Four. The NDP had 33 questions in that period after. Do you know how many they asked about defense spending? Zero. Now, at the same time, as Aaron mentioned, they were doing a lot on nuclear abolition. And a motion was put forward, and there was a huge debate, and that became fantastic work that Alain Laverdière put forward. But, you know, on the foreign policy issues, NDP is pretty good. On defense, you know, they're different. It's not clear. So, not a lot of, you know, seemed to did pretty well with that investment. So let's look at the media. Let's go to the next story. Let's go to the. So in Ottawa, we have something called the National Press Gallery. Okay, so this is a group of reporters that work in Ottawa, and they have special passes, and they cover politics on a daily basis. So all the CBC reporters, all the Canadian press, everybody. And they have offices right near the Hill, and they're especially authorization to go in for all the press conferences and go on the trips and things like that. Did you know that the media industry in Canada has been so devastated that the press gallery is the smallest it's been now in 22 years? It's so small. So many people have been laid off. And so you don't have as many reporters to cover as many issues, to become specialized in foreign affairs and things like that. So you get stories that are being reported that are terrible, or you get the reporters who are tremendously overworked. They've got to do 2-3 stories a day in order to fill the newspapers. So it's a very bad situation in terms of what's happening with the media there. And I think that the defense lobby and the military take advantage of this. Our current chief of defense staff, General Vance, when he was appointed, he came out with this thing. He talked about the weaponization of public affairs. So public affairs is what the military calls their media relations and relations with the public. And they have a whole department, dozens and dozens of people devoted to public affairs. The weaponization of public affairs. And what does that mean? I mean, who's the enemy? Who's this weaponization being directed toward?
We're the enemy.
We're the enemy, yeah. You know, we're something that must be overcome or subdued. And public affairs. letters as a tool to use it. And I thought that was very instructive, and they have. I think the current level of reporting that we have been seeing right now on these issues is appalling. I mean, I did a lot of work in the media and on the Hill over the last 10 years when I was with the Rideau Institute. I did a lot of work, got to know lots of people really well. Many of those reporters are not there now. But when you look at the kind of quality of reporting about NATO, the NATO summit, and military spending, it was just wrong. Global actually did a story that talked about Canada increasing its contribution to NATO to 2% of GDP. Well, if you know anything about these, that's just wrong. We don't hand $40 billion to NATO. It's 2% of our spending for the military, which is, and we're a NATO country. It's not, we don't write a check to NATO. But Trump says that, and he doesn't understand it. He gets it wrong. And, of course, some reporter at Global 2-3 writes it down and just copies it. And what happens is you get all these headlines that are so hawkish because they're all relying on the same sources now. Lynn, I wonder if you just fix it. Canada's in defense spending must come quickly. Another 62 over 20 years. The B-fuel military includes new armored London defense giant. Says it can provide. This is from life. But I just want to, if you dig into these stories a bit more, look who they're quoting. It's the same people over and over again. David Perry, defense analyst from Maine Global Affairs. Maine Global Affairs. If you read these stories, follow along. These guys are funded by the industry. They have ties to the industry. So does he. So he's speaking for this group, and the Globe and Mail reported on this, all the money they're getting from Lockheed Martin. So they get money from Lockheed Martin. Then the reporter is doing a story on the F-35. They call up this guy, who always answers his phone. And they give him a quote. Without revealing the fact, now I'm not saying he shouldn't be in there, but they should say, Canadian Global Affairs Institute, funded by the defense industry, or with ties to the military, or something like that, to explain to people what's going on. So the level of reporting is a real crisis in terms of the decline of reporting and who they're actually. Now, there are some great exceptions. You know, I think Dave Kuglacy does a great job, Stephen Chase, fantastic job. And so we've got some really good examples. I don't want to paint everybody, but overall, the quality is not very good. Academia, there's going to be a big challenge because, you know, all this funding that's being put forward last week at the Defense Policy Review, a lot of it is going to be directed towards academics and universities. The old Security and Defense Forum funding, the money used to go direct to the universities and directly to professors to produce papers, to run conferences. Students get involved, so young people start getting involved in it, and they begin this relationship with the Department of National Defense. That's the weaponization of public affairs. And so our universities are going to be flooded with millions of dollars over the next few years from the Department of National Defense. So let's look at the movement.
The next one?
Yeah. So where are we in 2017 with the peace movement? Well, there's some good signs. There are some good signs. There are some things starting to happen. It's true, we've got the challenge we're being, we don't have highly visible people. Who's the David Suzuki of the peace movement? Who's the Maude Barlow of the peace movement? I don't know. You know, we need people.
John Mulaney.
Mulaney's good.
Matthew Behrens.
Yeah, Matthew Behrens. And see, we need a lot more. We need people like them and others. I think we need a lot more people who are really visible and out there who can give voice to what we all think about.
Cesar Jaramillo.
Cesar does a good job, too. Yeah. So we need to find those folks and really help get them in the media more and overcome the blocks that we've got. So right now, there's some things happening in terms of, this is a protest at CANSEC, the arms industry show. Canada's largest arms industry show is just outside of Ottawa, and this was last year. And you see we've got a whole bunch of folks out there picketing now to try to slow and disrupt the progress of this. And literally, people are pulling up in Maseratis. That's an arms dealer in a Maserati pulling up, trying to get to the arms show, and we had people there. And in his case, it was the Saudi arms deal. People are really upset about that. And we really have got a lot of interest from what's happening on that. Let's go to the next one. This was a demo that I was part of this winter, put on by a group called Pacify. It's a new group organizing here. It's Get to Yes, Ban the Bomb. This is Get to Yes, approve of the ban negotiations that are going on. And we had people out picketing out in front of the Parliament buildings and Lanchard Block, right outside the Prime Minister's office window. I got to say, I moved to Ottawa in 2000. I have never been part of a protest specifically focused on nuclear weapons on the Hill. In all these years, in 17 years, this was the first one. So I think that's very positive. And there's all kinds of folks from all kinds of different sectors coming in and getting involved in that. So I think that's also very encouraging. So let's go to the next one. So I showed you the CANSEC protest last year. This year, it was almost twice the size when we were outside. And you see all the people. This is 7 a.m. in the morning.
Good for those people.
You know? In fact, we told everyone to be there at 7, and I got there at 1:45, and there was a dozen people standing there waiting for us, ready to go. You know, they were so keen on getting out there. You can see, the other thing I tell you, I've been involved in a lot of protests over the years, and I've done a lot of shouting at buildings where you don't see anybody. You know, you can't see anything, but this is how close you are to people coming in, and you can engage people in conversations. As they're coming in, the police are there, and there's all the traffic that's backed up. So people were very empowered last year. We had even more people this year. So it's very exciting. So I'm just going to wrap up here very quickly. I want to say the International Peace Bureau is very keen and important, has put military spending on it. And this year, all the member groups of International Peace Bureau, because we've been knew that the military spending was going to ramp up, because we had so much trouble getting into the media, we said, how are we going to connect with people? They said, let's use social media. So, Science for Peace, Voice of Women for Peace, Conscience Care, the UDO Institute, Physicians for Global Survival, and a few others all came together, but cobbled enough money together to put on a video and to get a petition on Facebook to reach out. And you know this? For every $100 you spend on Facebook, you can reach 10,000 people. For every $100, you can reach 10,000 people with a message. And so we got this message out. I don't want increases to military spending. Let's build peace instead. We got several thousand people to sign a petition, but we had a video attached to it too. We reached over 320,000 people in just a few days using Facebook. So maybe we don't need to rely on those pro-defense reporters so much anymore. Maybe there's a way that we can go directly to the public. And the video was seen more than 51,000 times. I mean, that's amazing. I was dumbstruck when I saw that. And just these four peace groups cobbling together a little bit of money. And we were able to do that.
And then within 2 weeks or something, like it was just right away.
Yeah, we did it very fast. So I think that was a huge success. And I want to congratulate everybody that was part of that. So I think there's some challenges that we need to look at. I think we need to focus on city-by-city organizing again. We need to go back to the 80s and realign our organizing at the city level. We need, I think we need more networks of our groups. This was really great. We had these 8 organizations working together on this, but we need to put more structure to it. We need a rebuilt Canadian Peace Alliance or Canadian Peace Network or something to bring folks together. And we need to engage young people a lot more. So I'll just finish off.
Can we show
picture.
The little video?
Yeah.
Can we show it?
Yeah, we could. Sure. So I just want to say I'm dedicating myself to this now. I'm not full-time employed by a peace group anymore, but I'm taking a big chunk of my time, and I'm done with trying to lobby. I'm done with trying to get in the newsrooms. I'm going to organize now. I think that's what we need to do. Thank you. love.